Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Welcome, everyone. Okay. This week is going to be a little easier than last week with figuring out the Haftorah. There's only one, a Parshas Emor. The Parsha deals with Kohanim, and therefore the Haftorah deals with Kohanim. And a person might think, well, that has to do with the temple, and we don't have a temple, or it has to do with certain people, and we don't have those people. I'm not a Kohen, or I'm not a Levi, so why do I need to know about all this? So the truth is, the Jewish people is described as a nation of Kohanim. There's some special thing about a Kohen that really every person is like a Kohen. Give you an example, that the Kohen, when they begin the Shabbos, so they would light the menorah, right? That's what he would do. He would light every day in the temple, he lit the menorah. When comes Shabbos, when we light the Shabbos candles, we're lighting the menorah, just like we are taking the place of the Kohen. The Kohen would eat these special loaves of bread. That's what we eat on Shabbos, our loaves of challah. And each one of us, a Kohen just means a more intense servant of Hashem. That's really what it is. And our goal is to serve Hashem in a more intense way, but we can't all do it. We kind of take turns, or certain people represent us. The Rambam, a very interesting Rambam, he said that when the temple stood, it was like you didn't have much choice. If you were in this tribe, you went here. You were in that tribe, you went there. And you were kind of given a role. This is what you got to do. But he says today, almost anybody who wants to could be a Kohen. If you want to serve Hashem in that more intense way, you could be the Kohen or you could be the Levi, because it's open to anyone today. It's not, you're not born in a society where they say, okay, you know, you're expected to do more. You're expected to be involved in prayer. You're expected. So the Kohen role is really open to all of us. We have a tradition that Aaron was Ohev Shalom Verodev Shalom, that he loved peace. And he chased after peace. And it's not enough just to like peace. Okay, I guess it's better than war. You have to... He went around in his society and he fixed things. And there's, believe it or not, there are people that don't get along with each other. And there are other people who can make that difference. And the role of somebody that's close to Hashem in a more intense way feels bad that people are fighting with each other, because, you know, war and disagreement just brings, it's just not a healthy thing. Even if somebody's right, the fact that they're not getting along creates a lot of challenges, a negative. And the role of the Kohen was to fix that. And that's what Aaron did, is that he went in society and he helped when people weren't getting along. What do you call that when you have a... like a middle person where they negotiate with both?
Mediator.
A mediator. He was like a mediator. When a person also was estranged from Hashem, where a person had sinned a lot, he would help bring that person back. The person who sinned would bring a sin offering, and he would... even when people felt distant, one of the offerings was a shlamim, a peace offering, a greeting. They would greet Hashem. Sometimes people, they don't feel it like they once did. So they could come to, so the Kohanim would be there. When people would get leprosy, we have a tradition that they got leprosy because they spoke against other people or they were arrogant. So who did they go to get fixed, to get healed? They didn't go to a doctor, they didn't go to the rabbi, they went to the Kohen. Because the Kohen could help. He saw it as his job to help people, to help people that weren't getting along or that weren't working. So that role is very important in our society, to have people that are Kohanim. There are some people that take the role, they're the ones that make the fights. You know, there's some people, they're complaining, they're making fights, and then there are other people, they see their role is to try to work things out so the people get along. And that's a very special thing. You don't get rewards for that. In fact, sometimes people would rather fight. Leave me alone. Let me fight. You know, but it's a special thing to have that role in society. This is in the prophet Yechezkel, and he had a lot of future visions. In other words, the society they had was the temple was going towards the downfall. The people had sinned. And he gave them hope for the future because he predicted the future temple. His big prophecy is the dry bones, that usually once a person is dead, that's it. And once a person's been dead hundreds of years, that's really it. But so what does he see? He sees dry bones coming back to life. That's the vision that, and the vision is that we don't give up hope. Things rejuvenate, and there's miracles in the Jewish people that happen all the time. This time of year is what we call the Sfira, when there's we don't have weddings this time of year, and we try to avoid music. And the reason is that Rebbe Kiva's students all perished. Rebbe Kiva was the leading rabbi of his time. And he had 24,000 students in his school, all the rabbis that existed in his time, and they all died within these 7 weeks. According to most, within 5 weeks. Nobody knows, was it a plague, was it a war? There's different theories about what happened to him. But they had a whole generation of students, of scholars and teachers and pious people. They all got wiped out. And Rebbe Kiva, he was already well past his 80s, started over again with 5 students. Every single piece of Torah we have today came from those 5 students. Imagine if he would have, given up or not, but Yechezkel has that vision of hope. In other words, we don't give up. After the Holocaust, people thought that was it. The Jewish people kaput. That's it. It can't happen. Like, they lived in Europe, and they just, here we're sitting, after the Holocaust, and our outlook is very different. You don't give up on the, but that was Yechezkel's vision. His vision was of the future, that people have to see the future. And in his vision of the future, he envisions Kohanim. He envisions them. Now, the truth is, he's a little bit difficult to understand. Like, not all the details are there. Prophecies were said in a dreamlike way. A lot of the Haftorahs are very poetic and dreamlike, and we don't always fully understand what the deeper meanings are. Somewhat, he describes things for the regular Kohen that seem like the Kohen Gadol, and that's what we're going to talk about. And that's strange, because some people suggest that even the regular Kohen will be like the Kohen Gadol, or maybe he put the laws together. It's a little bit confusing here exactly how, because we have a Kohen, and then we have the Kohen Gadol, and the Kohen Gadol had even stricter rules and more, and he seems to put them together, mix them together. Some people say that in the future, every Kohen will be like the Kohen Gadol. There's a tradition, some people say that the firstborns are going to be back. There's an idea that when the Messiah comes, everybody that has goofed will get another chance. So the firstborn originally were intended, instead of having a Kohen, you would send the oldest of each family to represent the family and go. And at the golden calf, the firstborn blew it, and Hashem said, all right, you know what? This isn't working. Let's take the Kohanim to be the special tribe for Hashem. And so, but there's a tradition that when Mashiach comes, the firstborn are going to get another chance. Now, I don't know what's going to happen to the Kohanim, but there's even, the Gemara even says that the pig will become kosher. So the question is what that means, right? It says, the word chazir means return, hechazir, to turn back. So some people say it means that Esav is the one who always represented the pig, that even when Mashiach comes, even somebody that's been very negative will have a chance to fix that. In other words, mankind will be fixed. Other people learn that it's strange. Like, why, how should the pig be kosher? So today we have things that kosher bacon, you know, we have vegan, you know, kosher. They actually came up with, they were wondering, they genetically modify if they could give, you know, if they could give the pig the, you know, the cloven hooves and the, you know, is there a way the, because it's an obscure statement, but the simple reading of it is that a pig is an insult. If someone calls you a pig, they're not being very nice. They need to talk to Aaron. But in the future, even somebody who really is a pig, who's a hypocrite, who's disgusting, who they're going to be fixed. That's the opportunity. That's what it means that the pig will become kosher. It means that all of mankind, the very negative things we see, they'll be given an opportunity to better themselves. To, you know, there's some people that are intrinsically wicked, no matter what you do. They're, and then there are other people that have really, they're in the mud, you know, they need to fix that. They'll come back. But that's all part of the vision. What I'm trying to say, though, is though the idea of being a Kohen, of being serving Hashem directly in a more intense way, in a special way, that speaks to all of us. And as Jews, we're all expected to be, the word chosen people really means we're chosen to behave better than those that are around us. And we don't say it's not fair, it's a privilege. It's a privilege to know, sometimes you don't get rewarded for working harder or doing more, but we feel fortunate if we know the right things to do, so we do the right things. So let's see. So, first of all, even in the Kohanim, there were families that had not done such a good job. So the sons of Tzaddik, they had always clung to Hashem. They didn't, there were other families of Kohanim that had become big shots and had abused the power of being a Kohen. But the sons of Tzaddik, they always were loyal. And so Hashem says, when the future comes, the ones that are the children of Tzaddik, those are going to be the ones that I'm going to choose. Asher Shomres Mishmeres. What did they do? They kept it going. They were guards. They protected. Mikotche Betos B'nei Yisrael. Even though the Jewish people strayed, they stayed loyal. Me'alai Hemi Yikruvei. So Hashem rewards the people that have clung to Him. You reward the people that are loyal. You reward the people that have stuck to it, that have done the right thing. So that's the first thing that even Kohanim, not all Kohanim, it will be the ones, the children of Tzaddik. I don't think we know a lot about him, but we know about his family. We know his descendants. In other words, there's different lines of Kohanim, and so his line, for whatever reason, stayed loyal. There were different branches, so that branch was the one that really stuck to the right ways. Even though other people didn't, they always stayed loyal. But I don't know more. I don't know anything about him personally. So they will come near, but under the final hakriv li chayle v'dam, and they're going to bring the fats and the blood. New Hashem. Now, some people think that what Hashem wants from people are big sacrifices. You got to give it all. The reality is, the only part that went on the altar was a little bit of fat and a little bit of blood, and the rest, those were things that you would probably throw out anyways. And the rest you get to eat. It's really steaks. You get lamb chops and you get steaks. And, you know, it's not a, Hashem doesn't ask a lot from us. That's an important lesson. Like some people, they think like, he's asking more than I could possibly ever do. No, we don't, our view of Hashem is no, that he asks really a very little bit. You know, it's a very, a little bit of fat, a little bit of blood. That's all. Sometimes you'll hear that from like non-Jews. Hashem wants blood. You know, Hashem wants you to, the human sacrifice or the crucifix, or that's all foreign to us. The Hashem doesn't demand the really big, you know. He's happy if we're consistent and we give our, you know, our small amount. You know, it's what's within our reach. He's not asking us more than we can do. Verse 16. They come to my temple, the Hema Yikruvu El Shulchani, and they'll come to my table, and they will serve me, Visham Mishmarti, and they'll protect. They'll guard the things they need to guard. 17. When they come into the gates, they wear special clothing. They put on special clothing for their service in the temple. Big day pishtim, they wear the flax. But lo yalem semer, and they won't wear wool. Bisharasim bishari achatzah pinimis, when they work in the outer, they won't mix wool and linen. They won't wear the shatnas. there actually was shatness in the temple garments, and some in the belt, I believe, which is interesting. Like, we normally don't wear mixtures of wool and linen, and it could be there were, and there also sometimes were mixtures of wool and linen in the talus, which is interesting too. In other words, you could have wool tzitzis on a linen garment. And that's a discussion in of itself, why certain fabrics, what that symbolizes. The simple read of it is there are sometimes good people, but they don't mix. Wool is great and linen is great, but just don't put them together. And there are people like that, that they're great individually, but it doesn't mean that you want to put them next to, you put them together, it creates a friction. What it represented, they say for Shatness, that the first human fight between Cain and Havel, between Cain and Abel, was that one was a farmer and one was a herdsman. In other words, one dealt with animals and one dealt with land. One was a wool man, you know, he dealt with the animal. One was a cotton, was a flax, was the farmer. And there was a difference in their personality that you put them together and they killed each other, right? That's the and so normally we try to keep warring parties apart, but in the service of God you can put them together. In other words, in the even people that think differently, when they stand in front of Hashem, they can work together towards the greater good. We have people that you could love a person but still not want to sit next to them because you know that you just two of you just don't. That doesn't mean, you know, God should bless them and keep them and only good things should happen, but keep them far away from me. That's okay. I mean, it doesn't mean that you're not required to, you have different people you like to spend more, but you only want good things to happen to them. You don't want them to suffer. You don't want them to, but it doesn't mean that you have to, you know, sit down next to them if you don't enjoy their company or if you know that it's shatness, it's a mixture. But over here he mentions that they keep the wool and the linen separate. Peri Pishim Yo Rishom, they wear special hats. Umiknese Masayim, special pants. They wear whatever. Lo Yikri Obiza. And, this wasn't worn for like to catch perspiration. These clothing, there's an idea that clothing, there is significance to clothing. There is significance. We wear special clothing at special times. We dress up for Shabbos. We dress up for Yontif. Many of you know there's like a mitzvah to buy new clothing for Yontif or wear nice clothing for it's not just, unfortunately people turn it into a fashion show, but it's an honor of the holiday. If a person does this right, meaning that you have to take those feelings that how it's, you know, that Hashem created things that are nice and look nice and make me feel good and I feel energetic that I have a new outfit or whatever, and use that in the, well, it's a new holiday, it's a new Yontif, it's a new day, it's a new, unfortunately there are people that use that to say, well, I have nicer things than they have, or I have the designer and they don't have the, you know, it's like anything, you could use it in a negative way. But clothing to us are very positive. The Hasidim, they're into their shrimal, you know, they put on their fur, that's like, you know, and they're, but they also view that as part of sanctifying the clothing. We feel fortunate to have the clothing and we can put on things to serve Hashem. In verse 19. But Tseisim Al-Chatz, they go to the outer courtyard, Alam, Yishuas Bedeim, they would wear one set of clothing when they served Hashem, and they wore another set of clothing when they were with the people. And they stored this clothing, Belishka Sakoda. They had special rooms where they kept the clothing. What's interesting is that they recycled. When the clothing wore out, they used it for the wicks. They didn't waste things, and they used it for the wicks in the menorah. They made them out of the clothing. But they had a special room. What I always try to figure out was, you had tens of thousands of Kohanim coming. Like, how did you fit them? You know, I'll take a large, I'll take a, you know, like, yeah, if you ever bought clothing, like, you can go to many stores, it doesn't fit right. You know, like, a Kohen was supposed to look, like, everything was supposed to be, you know, fit. You weren't supposed to look sloppy. It was supposed to be, the Pasuk says, and it's for honor and glory. So, like, who decided, okay, give him this size hat and this size, you know, you had all these people coming and storing the, and then I also wonder, like, who washed the clothing? Like,
oh, you know, that's part that I was concerned. They had those white outfits.
But they changed, in taking the ashes and all, they didn't wear the holiest clothes.
Right, they would get dirty, and then they would have other. But and then it was like all stored in like I just the. But somehow they had a system; it all worked, you know. It all
medium long.
They wore an apron. They had been hired. They wore an apron.
Yeah, but that was part of the
right. But it's the whole preserve, the main.
Yeah. So this is all mentioned here. The Hasidim have a custom when they daven, they put on a special belt. They call that the gartel. Now Hasidim, even though we don't have that custom necessarily, we try to put on something special for davening. Sometimes it's a jacket. Sometimes I had a teacher that wanted us to put a tie on for davening. He felt that if you would go to an important public figure, you'd put on a tie. So when you stand in front of God. Some people they just do that for the morning service, the longer service. They put on a talus. That's the idea. But there's an idea when you stand in front of Hashem, you recognize that, do something special. At the very minimum, a person makes sure that they wash their hands, that they're clean, sometimes that they prepared themselves to daven. That's that idea. So that's what he mentions over here. Okay, velo yikachu es'am b'gdeim, but they wouldn't wear the same clothes when they were aware that when they were standing in front of Hashem. Verse 20, v'roshem lo yigalehu, and they had their hair, they made sure that it wasn't sloppy. In other words, when they went in, the Kohanim had to have their hair was not supposed to be like all over the place. They had a Kohen Gadol used to take a haircut every day. I don't know if that means he shaved or he had, but every hair was like in place. And it was symbolic of like being organized. Like everything has its place. Everything should look the way it's supposed to. Everything is thought of. When you serve Hashem, it's very explosive, so to speak. You're standing in front of if a person were to go in front of the emperor or the dictator, he would rehearse every word perfect because he's standing in front of somebody who has life and death in their hands. People were very careful. So when you stand in front of Hashem, everything should be organized. Everything should be in order. There's a mention that that people that study Torah should be careful not to have their clothing look sloppy. And in fact, it goes so far that says if you have a stain on your clothes, you're in big trouble. If you're people think that you are a religious person and you walk around with like stained. So some people wonder that a lot of students walk around with wrinkled clothes and their shirts sticking out, and it doesn't. It's a very funny thing. Like I guess the rabbis can only do so much. And a lot of the schools, they like the boys to dress formally, so everybody gets a white shirt and everybody dress. But then what do? The white shirt's sticking out, and it's all wrinkled, and it's here and it's there. But that's more personality. But there is definitely a concept of trying to look neat and organized. There were schools that focused on that. And you would, if you met a student who went to those schools, you would know it because their shirts were perfectly. I was like somewhat like the military. You know, in the military, you got to shine your shoes. If your shoes aren't, shined, you're in trouble. You know, if your uniform isn't exactly, because that's part of discipline is having everything the way it should be, everything in a certain. So to some extent, our service of Hashem shouldn't be haphazard. It shouldn't be our shirt hanging out, our shirt stained, our hair hanging out, our. That's just symbolic, really, but it means that when we serve Hashem, we try to think of everything. It's not just haphazard. It's not random. We're standing in front of Hashem, and we want to get our life in order, so we at least could get our clothing in order. We make sure our hair is not sticking out, and so that's somewhat the mention over here. Gemara mentions that the Kohen Gadol had this special haircut. And there was a discussion about it, like, what was it, exactly like with like a perfect hair, which was it? They had a presidential candidate who used to get those real expensive haircuts.
North Carolina,
that's right. It reminded me of that. I was trying to think, like, how do you get a $700 hair? Like, what do you cut already? okay. 21. V'yayin lo yishtu. Now, when you go in the service of Hashem, Now, especially, you're eating a lot of meat, so maybe in those days, meat went with wine. That was the beverage of choice. Even today, in fine dining, they, you know, meat red, they like to serve wine with the meal. And so if you're a Kohen, you say, well, I'll have some wine with my meat, with my offering. No, no, you don't do that. Wine is like, first of all, a person has to have a degree of respect. It's very difficult when a person has drunk a little bit of wine. He's not in complete control. And
do you think that goes back to Nadav and Abihu?
Yes, yes, absolutely. Right, right. That
the
was
next line after they.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Died.
That's the example, right? When we come in front of Hashem, we're not supposed to be drunk. We're not supposed to. To this day, there's a custom that on Simchas Torah, they do the blessing of the Kohanim early in the morning, because they're afraid that later in the day they might have had drunk too much, and Kohanim aren't supposed to get up there in front of the people if they've been drinking. It's just a respect. You have to have control. So he mentions that here. No drinking to the Kohanim. Now, some people say they really didn't have many other beverages. They had no Coke, they had no Pepsi, they had... So there was basically, even the water was... That wine was almost all they had, but you couldn't drink that when you came into the temple. 22. V'amanu gusha lo yikachu lehem. Now this is a little confusing. As I mentioned, today only a Kohen Gadol can't marry a widow, but a regular Kohen could. But here he mentions a widow and a divorcee, lo yikachu lehem, lenashim akim besula mizera beis Yisrael, just a woman who's never been married, v'amana shetia amana mikohen, but if she's a widow from a Kohen, then he could marry her. There's a discussion about the why of it. Now, the truth is we don't know the why. The Torah says it should be that way. There's some interesting ideas, though. One idea was that sometimes the Kohen went into the Holy of Holies when people's fate would be decided in the coming year. And sometimes people fall for in an open society where you meet different people. Sometimes somebody decides they like somebody else's wife, and the only problem is they have a husband. So the Kohen Gadol has no problem. All he has to do is, God, you know that guy over there? Maybe you shouldn't let him live in him. I want, you know, because he thinks he wants his wife. So in order to prevent the Kohen, you know, not being able to pray fully and think, you know, or to want somebody else's wife, they said no. Kohanim, that you can't take some, you can't manipulate that to be able to get somebody else's wife. That's, they didn't want that. They left that. A Kohen should know that he's never allowed to have somebody, you know, to, can't convince them to get divorced and then take the wife. That's off limits to the Kohen. There's another idea, which is just worth mentioning just because it's different than today. And that is, in those days, people, if there was a normal man and a normal woman, they didn't, they felt if they were married, they worked it out. They managed to get along together, and they both had a lot in common. They were trying to serve Hashem. And they felt that if Hashem helped them choose each other, they would find a way to make it work. And it's interesting, after World War II, when there were Holocaust survivors, first of all, in Europe, it was dangerous to be alone. Like, for a woman to be alone was just, you know, you were open. It was just, the people, they had lost their whole families, and they felt an immediate need to have a family. And so people hooked up after the war, almost like they'd meet somebody, and in a few minutes they'd decide to get married. And they called them war marriages. And sometimes that one was much older, and they were from different backgrounds. And then they restarted their lives, and they had kids. But then their grandkids would wonder, like, Dad and Mom, like, you're so different, or you're 20 years older, or you're 10, you're Russian, and you're French, and you're. But there were a number of these marriages, and I knew people who had parents of that, you know, the Holocaust, and they were just as successful or unsuccessful as any other marriage. They were Jewish. They wanted to start their families again. Good. You're a man. You're a woman. Okay. You know, and that's what they did. It's just, but you read the biographies, it's just remarkable. Like, he met someone in the camp who was from the same city as his mother or his father. Good. That's it. They made the shidduch. Like, but they were driven. They wanted to rebuild their families, and they wanted to build a Jewish family. And as long as the other side wanted to do that, they were going to make it work. Now, in olden times, people got divorced if somebody was a sinner, if somebody did, you know, the wrong kind of behavior. But so therefore, if somebody got divorced because they sinned, why would somebody else want to marry somebody who, you know, again, well, maybe they got the wrong side. Maybe he was the one who was doing it, or maybe she was the one. But in those days, there was a certain stigma attached to somebody that got divorced because it was so unusual. Today, it doesn't. Unfortunately, it's not no longer the case. We live in a different society, in a different place, and it's unfortunately much too common. It's just a different. But a Kohen, if this was somebody else who the husband thought, you know, he had to divorce her because she was fooling around on him, for a Kohen to then go and take her would not be appropriate. You know, you're a Kohen. Why would you take a woman that's, you know, cheated on the man and this and that? It's just not. Maybe she changed. Maybe she did. But that's not a Kohen has to be extra careful.
Isn't it also then in line with purity for Kohen Gadol?
Right. That's right. Those are just some ideas mentioned. But there's no.
But nowadays, could a Kohen marry a divorced woman?
Not a divorced woman, but a widow. He could marry. But again, those are just ideas. We don't. At the end of the day, they have different rules. They have different people that are eligible, that are not eligible. It's actually very difficult for if a Kohen can't marry someone that's been divorced, and they remarrying when they're older. It's hard for them to find somebody that. Well, I guess they could find a widow, but I don't know if there's a large population of widows or not. You know, but sometimes you'll see that there are. There are single Kohanim that have, it's just much more limited who they're able to marry. Okay, 23. Vesami Yoreh. Now, the Kohen will be someone who will give direction to people. He will be able to teach people. Bein Kodesh L'chol, between what is holy and what is not. Ubein Tomei L'Torah, what is pure and what is not. And 24. Val Riv, and if people are fighting. Hey Miyam, they should bring them to justice. They should help work it out. You can't let these fights simmer. Sometimes there are people that have legitimate differences, and somebody's right and somebody's wrong, but fix it. Go and resolve it. Get it mediated. Get it resolved. But don't let the fight simmer on for years and years and years. Ve'im yishvedes teresti, they will judge my Torah, v'eschu in the statue, v'kol mo'adai, and all the holidays, yishmu eshav sosai, and they'll keep the Shabbos, and they'll sanctify it. Verse 25, v'almeis ladam lo yavu l'tama. And they won't go to a cemetery. They won't come in contact with the dead. Now, there are different ideas about this, about why they can't come in contact with the dead. There are other religions where their religions revolve around the dead. In fact, the churches, they build the churches on the cemeteries. That's the I think they don't allow it anymore, but all the old churches, they have all the cemeteries and they buried the popes and they, you know, under the doorstep, and then Judaism is a religion of life. Even as much as we respect the dead and honor the dead, we're a religion of the future. We don't the Kohanim that serve Hashem, they're not involved in death, or they stay away from death. There is an idea that that a Kohen belongs to everyone, and so, you know, he's above, like, this is my friend and this is not my friend, this funeral I go to, this one I don't. He's not involved in that, except for his very close relatives.
Couldn't that also have to do with purity?
Mm-hmm.
Not touching the impure.
Right. Even though there's a way to become pure afterwards, but a Kohen has to always be pure. He has to serve Hashem. And when somebody passes away, that's a loss. That's an impurity. There was somebody holy, and then they're no longer here. And so that creates a vacuum. And so the Kohen has to stay away from any kind of vacuum, any kind of impurity, except for his direct relative, La'av, for his mother, his father, his son, his daughter, La'ach, his brother, La'achos, his sister. It's interesting, they leave out the wife over here, and the Torah mentions the wife. The Kohen's allowed to go to the wife's funeral. But it's just interesting why it's not on this list or is on the list. It mentions his sister. I mean, nothing against women. He says he can go to his sister's funeral. I'm sure he'd go to his...
Who has never been married.
I don't know about Yechezkel. Yeah, I don't know. How do you leave off the... No, in other words, there's a list of funerals that the Kohen is allowed to go to and become impure for, and it mentions the mother, the father, the brother, the sister, and it doesn't mention the wife. Okay. But 26. Bakre Tarasso, again, there are theories for things. And after the purity, after he does become impure, which a Kohen should always avoid that, so it takes 7 days to purify himself, and he will count them. There's a counting of purity. It's interesting, we're in the counting session now, between now and Shavuos, we count the Omer. It's also a counting of purity. There's an idea that in Egypt we were very impure, we got involved in the idols and the lifestyle of Egypt, and we're counting towards Shavuos, it's seven sevens. In other words, it's the seven, we go up in levels of purity, and that's, it uses that same word of counting. Anytime you find a counting, it's a counting of purity. 27, Ubo, Ubo, Elakodesh. And then he'll come to the holy areas, to the inner sanctum, Lisharis, Yakir Chatoso. Now he'll bring his offering. Now what, he's talking about the Kohen over here. Now what sin offering does the Kohen bring? So again, it's not so clear. Usually a Kohen doesn't bring a sin offering unless he sinned, per se. Some people say this is in the future, like in Messianic times, when we've all sinned. Before they begin the service, the first thing you got to do is apologize. That's always the start of a relationship, is that if you wrong somebody, at some point you have to acknowledge that and let them know you feel bad about if you did something you shouldn't have towards them. And so the Kohanim, when Mashiach comes, they're going to have to start off with a big sin offering. You could learn it that way. It's said in an indirect way. There is an idea that the first day that a Kohen serves, he would bring an offering. That's what they call the chinuch offering, a consecration or a dedication that a Kohen would bring. Some people say that's what it's referring to over here.
But no one's perfect. So sometimes you don't know that you've sinned, including a Kohen.
But it's very specific types of sins that you would bring an offering for. In other words, the offering, there are offerings that are like insurance policy. Let me bring this just in case. You know, they say that Eev used to do that. He would bring an offering just to, they want to show you how holy, how good he was, and still he got, you know. But most, like a chatos, is usually a very specific, where a person knows they did one of the 39 no-nos that had they done it on purpose, they would have been cut off, but they did it by mistake, and then they bring an offering. Like it's a, so the question is how they would do that, or why is that mentioned here? But other people learn they mean it's his dedication offering, and when a person dedicates himself, he dedicates himself to be careful, even with his, not to make mistakes. The chatos is an offering for a mistake. So part of what the Kohen does is he tries not to make mistakes. 28. Faisa lehem nachla. And the Kohanim, they had no property. The rest of the Jewish people, everybody gets an estate. You know, when Shia comes, you're going to get a nice piece of land, and in Yerushalayim or other places, you'll get a whole estate. And the Kohanim, they don't get any land. They're not going to get any... So what is their inheritance? What do they pass down in their family? So it's a very interesting expression. God says, I'm their inheritance. Ani nachlaskam. I'm my special relationship with them, that's better than all the riches and better than all the... I'm their... sometimes people don't have physical things to leave to others in this world. They don't have a... But they have spiritual things. The way a person... The gifts that a person has that they've developed, that those are the inheritance. Lotit and Laham Bisrael, and they don't get the inheritance that regular Israelites do. Ani Achuzah, I am their inheritance. Very interesting idea that they're to pass that down in their family. 29. Bamincha Chatos Asham, and they do get gifts. In other words, even though they don't get inheritance, they get to eat certain offerings. They get the flour offering, the sin offering, the guilt offering, lots of meat. Hemi yochlim. It's interesting. The Gemara mentions that they had a doctor in the temple, special for the Kohanim, because of their diet. You know, with all that meat and all the, and the floor in the temple was very cold, and they had to walk barefoot. And so a lot of them would get. They had a special doctor to treat the Kohanim that weren't feeling well, or they ate too much meat the night before, or the. It's just interesting. You know, it could be there were so many Kohanim, it was just useful to have at least one doctor in the house who was, you know, the. But it. But the Kohanim had a you know, they were given these they were spiritual diet, the Kohanim Yisrael, and there were special funds that were given, that they were, it was called the Cherme Kohanim. It was a Kohen fund. There was a certain fund that the Kohanim, while they were serving in the temple, they would have their needs taken care of. 30. Reishis Kol Bechuri. And they would get all the firstborn, the Kol Truma, Kol Mikol Trumaschem El Kohanim, the first of everything. There would be a certain amount of different gifts that were given to the Kohanim. Reishis Rusoseichem, and the first dough. That's what we call challah, by the way. The piece of challah that we have really would be given to a Kohen. Now today, the dough is not done in a state of purity, so a Kohen really can't do anything with it. So that's why we don't. But in the old days, the Kohanim, who didn't have land, most people were farmers and they had plenty of food. A Kohen wouldn't have so much food. You would give him a piece of challah. You would give him the dough. The first dough would go to the Kohen. Leniach bracha. And when you would give that to the Kohen, you would get the blessing. Leniach bracha el beisecha. Now, a strange thing over here, verse 31. It's also a strange verse to finish with. And by the way, the Kohanim shouldn't eat treif. Kol nevela v'treifa, they shouldn't eat non-kosher. Mina of, whether it's from a bird, whether it's from an animal, lo yoko kohanim. So, the Kohanim are so holy and they're so special, why does he finish off, tell the Kohanim not to eat non-kosher? So, it could be that sometimes people feel when they're doing the extra holy stuff, maybe what they do privately isn't so important because they're doing the really holy stuff. And so Hashem is telling you, when you do the holy stuff, it means that you've got to do the basics also. You don't forget the basics when you do the, you're going to be a Kohen, you're going to go in the holy, of course you got to keep kosher. You know, that's built on top of that. There was a service of the bird offering, and it's very interesting. Normally, kosher meat can only be eaten if the animal is killed through shechita, which means the severing of the neck with a very sharp knife. And that if the animal dies in any other way, it's not kosher. In fact, that's what treif means. Treif means that the animal's torn, like by a fox or a wolf, and it's not kosher. Now, there is a bird offering that was done in the temple, and they didn't slaughter it with a knife. It was done with the fingernail of the Kohen. I guess the bird's necks are pretty soft or the Kohen's fingernails are pretty sharp. But instead of doing it with the knife, there's a certain type of offering, the bird offering, that was done with the fingernail of a Kohen. Technically, if you were to do that with a chicken, it wouldn't be kosher. But in the temple, for that type of service, that was kosher. So you might have thought, well, hey, the Kohanim in the temple, this is how they kill the birds. So maybe outside the temple, they could also, you know, save you on a knife. You just do the fingernail thing. No, the Torah is saying that a Kohen, this is not called non-kosher. This was the way that service was done. Again, each service had a special symbolism to it and a special way of doing it. And it was, I think, a pigeon or a turtle dove where they just, you know, took the nail and they... But if don't try this at home, is what they're saying to the Kohanim. In other words, it could be this was the service in the temple, and in the temple service, that was appropriate, but were you to try to do that at home, that would not be appropriate. And so some people learn that's why. Other people just leave it as a question. I don't know why he's telling the Kohanim not to eat an avela or treifa.
Especially you tell us they always end on a good note.
Yes, yes, yeah, right, that's right. It's, what's the high point? Don't eat non-kosher, you know. Some people would donate animals that were on their last leg. You know, I got to do an animal. This animal's about to, you know, you can have it. You know, instead of sending it to the glue factory, I'm going to give it to the Kohen. And so the Kohen was saying, no, I don't, you know, don't bring your second best. Bring what's really good.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.